Hi, everyone. Cal Weinhold from the Professor's Inn. Just wanted to let you know that this next episode was recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic and the international shutdown. We talk on this podcast about telling yourself the truth and the places that we are prone to lie and how it always comes back to bite you in the ass. So I hope it actually helps in this moment think about where we're telling the truth and where we're telling lies. Take care. In light of the current COVID-19 crisis, we're teaming up with Himalaya to show our support. From the time that you hear this podcast through the end of May, Himalaya will match the exact dollar amount for every active subscriber to our premium channel and donate it to Direct Relief to support our healthcare workers.
Himalaya is where our podcast is housed. It's its home. And the reason it's there for us is because it has such an awesome premium site. And we want to invite you to come over and hang out with us in the Professor's Inn premium area, which offers a little social network where we can converse with each other, where we do AMAs. So for those of you not in the know, that means ask me anything. And where we also do members-only podcasts, which we're about to record right now, which is why I'm doing this. So come on over and join us. $7.99 a month gets you access to us, and we'd love to talk to you.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professor's Inn podcast. I am Dr. Karen Kelski.
And I'm Kel Weinhold, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kel Weinhold, K-E-L-W-E-I-N-H-O-L-D. On Twitter, I mostly retweet really smart things from really smart people. And on Instagram, you can check out pictures of my hikes or my bunnies.
Yeah, that's true. I'm also on Instagram, but I only put things about bunnies there. But you can find me if you look for Karen Kelski. Otherwise, if you want career-related things related to the Academy, find me on our Facebook page, which has a very large, very active and dynamic community at The Professor Is In on Facebook and on Twitter at Professor Is In.
All right, so we are coming at you in this episode with a little bit of anti-energy, maybe. Somebody said that in a review of us, that it was like your best, I can't remember what it was.
Oh,
like,
it's
academic aunties.
It's one of the reviews of this podcast on iTunes.
Right, I know.
It's where, like, the wise aunties.
I know. So this is, you know, that auntie that looks you square in the eye and says, straighten up and fly right? You know that one, right? That's the podcast you're joining today. Imagine each of us right in front of you, looking you square in the eye, saying, we're going to talk about some things.
Get right with the Lord. Which is literally a line I've never said even once in my entire life, but I just said it now.
Where you, whatever you define that to be, whatever you define as your moral center, which is a little bit what we're going to talk about today.
And your higher power.
And your higher power and whatever. Welcome to Digression Central.
So I marched in today knowing that we were recording and said, I have a topic. And that topic is, don't lie. And you looked at me and blinked at me and looked rather nonplussed and unimpressed.
No, I was impressed. My immediate thought was the same thought I'm having right now, which is just a ridiculous worry because it's not like we fail to fill time with our commentary. But it's like, what are we going to say for 30 minutes about not lying except don't lie? Mm. But you really brought up some great categories that we're sort of going to move through step by step from foundational all the way to structural about ways that people get off that center. They start to make choices that are not great, and they can all be boiled down to lying, sometimes by omission, sometimes not. But
well, so, and we're also going to talk about places where it's okay to not share all of your information with everybody all the time, which are, you know, some might call a lie by omission, but it's I would consider more of a, you know, calculated choices about who is entitled to what information. So we're going to talk about that as well.
And I would call most of those as none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That, you know, we get in this thing that we have to tell people our, well, everything we're doing when we don't, we didn't have to tell them our thinking behind it. Anyway. So we're going to start off at the foundation, at what is for most academics, their foundational document, their.
Well, actually, I would like to say prior to that, that I feel there is a reason to pause and just mention why I wanted to do this, because I don't want our listeners to misunderstand and feel that here at the Professor's Inn, we are seeing young academics lying through their teeth all the time, and that inspired this reaction.
No.
It did not. I don't know that, honestly, I've ever caught any of my clients in a lie. If I have any issue with the people I work with, it's they're over honest. Honestly, they're so anxious to do the ethical thing. And oftentimes I'm telling them that they have overshared, they're over scrupulous, that they are actually going too far in attempting, their bar is too high. And that they're losing a scope for some options prematurely that is not actually required of them. So it's actually the opposite. But we aren't seeing people lie all the time. So that's not the motivation that I came in for. But I did have a negotiating client that I was dealing with yesterday, and I realized that the issue of lying does come up among negotiators more often than it does with anyone else, and only because of the high stakes at that moment where you have come up against a contract with one job, but you are still hoping to maybe get another job. And then the negotiation with yourself there is, how much of a commitment do I make at this point? Mm-hmm. And how much of a contractual obligation do I have? And how much do I share any of that? And so that's the only time in all of the work I do where I'm actually engaging with dishonesty and potential dishonesty, and rarely does anyone even want to do that, but they often come and ask me, like, well, what would you say to this? So that was the motivation.
Okay. And in delivering your motivation, my grand attempt for us to have a structure to our podcast, which we always do, by the way, but we have down in front of us an outline. And so we've leapt to the end, near the end of the outline. So we're going to go back to the beginning now that you have said why this was popped into your head.
Motivations are important to disclose up front.
I think you're absolutely right, especially the idea that we are seeing a bunch of people out there making shit up, because we're not. Mm-mm. But we see the whatevers that exist that would make it possible, that kind of opens the temptation where those temptations are. Yeah. And the first temptation is in the CV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm. People do. We know this. We know this because it gets into the Chronicle of Higher Ed now fairly frequently. People do lie on their CVs.
People, like major administrators, leave their jobs because they have lied on their CVs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the members of the U.S. government were
I was just thinking about, the appointees.
Right. How many of them have, you don't really have a, whatever degree from wherever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's the place. First of all, I don't think the vast majority of people are lying about their degrees or that they have them or where they got them. I think that maybe there might be one or two of you out there that right now you're getting a little bit of that nauseous feeling in your stomach because you've maybe hedged something in your undergrad. The thing that you think they'll never know that you didn't go there, kind of thing. So, there are those big breaches, but I think we're talking more about the way you frame things or the way that you said that you did something, aren't you?
I'm just saying don't lie on your CV. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But I mean, what are the ways that people lie on their CV? One of the things that I see people do, have seen people do, is inflate their, inflate awards or inflate grants or inflate something. So, you applied for a grant.
You were a finalist for a grant, but you didn't actually get the grant, and you just kind of conveniently leave finalist off the CV.
Right.
Yeah, that would be a temptation. Absolutely.
Or say finalist when you, I don't even know if you put finalist for a grant on a CV or not.
Sometimes, for some of them, you do.
Yeah. But, you can imagine just applying for it and somehow finalist slips its way in because, who's going to know?
Yeah. You know what, though? I have to know, this is not on our little outline, but I knew that once we started talking about this, it was going to yield a lot of interesting digressions, I suppose, mm-hmm. but this isn't a digression. But I want to make a CV point, as the professor is in now, that sometimes people, again, you are incredibly overwhelmingly honest and ethical audience. You take this too far, and you are allowed to put on your CV conference talks that haven't happened yet, as long as they've been accepted into the conference, which is often something that happens 6 to 8 months in advance. And so you are allowed to put those on there. So make sure you do. That's not lying. Just because you haven't given it yet doesn't mean that it's a lie to put it on there, as long as it was officially accepted. Now, if it wasn't accepted and all you did was apply to the conference, but you're sticking that on there, oh boy, you've now crossed the line.
Right. And it's the same thing
with journal publications.
Right. And it's the same thing with journals, right? So there's that submitted versus under review versus R&R.
Ooh.
Right?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up.
Because that gets so squishy as people start to say under review.
And this may be just an honest mistake, not a lie at all, because I know I've advised lots of grad students who don't understand that these distinctions have to be made. And so they just shove everything into one undifferentiated list.
Right.
And with no record on a written notation on the CV that some things are only in submission.
Right.
And have not been accepted. And some things are only in R&R and have not yet been accepted. And all of those notations are required. And if you fail to use them, you are guilty of a misrepresentation, even mm-hmm. if it was unintentional.
Well, and then I can certainly see how in the stress of all of it and this sense that if I'm going to apply for this job, I need to show what I'm doing, to actually not have yet submitted the article and put it in there as submitted because you intend to submit it next week, next month, before the interview, something mm-hmm. that you talk yourself into believing it's okay to do it because it'll be done by then.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than what would be more appropriate, which is to do it, and then once it's done, write it accurately, not put it in there in that case. Then as you come up for the interview, to get back in touch and say the status of this has changed.
Right.
To update your CV, which mm-hmm. is a perfectly legitimate thing to do.
Yes.
But can you imagine? I mean, it's so easy for me to imagine that without any kind of like, these are, you know, morally bankrupt individuals out there, you know,
inflating their credentials.
Lying all the way through. It's that pressure, it's that little thing, it's that little crossing
sure.
the line.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. I actually have way, way more compassion about that. I mean, I still think you should come back across the line, mm-hmm. believe me. But I have so much more compassion about that than I do the super administrators who say they got their PhD from Harvard and somebody finally looks and they never even got a damn
all
PhD.
All they did was attend a 6-week, you know, pay as you go workshop at Harvard, which right. there was someone, this is based on a real story, and did not have an MBA from Harvard.
Right.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot. And I thought about it a lot with raising teenagers, with raising kids, that you can get away with things, but you have to live with the getting away with it.
Well, sure.
Right. So if I guess what I'm trying to say is those hedges on your CV, they're weighing on you somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're in there niggling at you, mm-hmm. just like the notes written on your hand for the Sanskrit final.
Mm-hmm.
When you didn't do it on your own, mm-hmm. it then I think feeds imposter syndrome. I think it feeds so much shame and all that.
I am glad you brought that up. I knew you would bring that up because I know you. And I know that it is very much feeds a cycle of abuse as well, because I think when people are not secure in their credentials, that's when they become abusive to others because they're threatened by everybody because they have that niggling doubt in the back of their mind. That doesn't mean that all abusers have lied in some way. There are profiles of abusers, all sorts of them, and I'm not saying that at all. But I do think that when you have this dishonesty in your background, you're going to have the niggling doubt all the time that is going to make you insecure. And when people are insecure, they are not operating from strength and they're reactive, and that leads them to behave badly.
Well, and then I wonder on the flip side of that, for more junior people, if it doesn't make them more susceptible to put in, to tolerate tolerating the intolerable, right?
Sure,
right.
Sure.
So you have that abusive advisor, and I keep seeing on Twitter these people posting saying, "I can't take another day of this advisor yelling at me or this PI yelling at me," and I keep thinking, what a freaking toxic mess that you have to come onto Twitter, even if it's an anonymous account, and say, what do I do? And I'm not saying those people there are lying. So again, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's a whole bunch of reasons that people put up with that. A lot of it is structural. I don't have anywhere else to go. But some of it in there is that I don't really belong here kind of thing. I can't stand up for myself. And I wonder whether that plays into it. And this is all dime store psychology. We should have a clinical psychologist in shame.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know who we should have. Brené Brown. Come on down.
Yeah. I agree with you, though. I do think that's true. In fact, that's one of the ways that that abusers keep... Now, this is not... I'm not speaking about academia right now, but abusers will often target a weakness, mm-hmm. a legitimate weakness mm-hmm. or flaw that the abusee has, like something they did wrong, and then the abuser will exaggerate its importance, say, well, I know this about you, and I'm going to tell everybody, and you're going to be destroyed and ruined, and hold it over their head in a power move. And I can see, you know, that playing into that dynamic as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that the major point on the CV thing takeaway we want here is we want it to be as clean as possible, because it puts you in the best position. And if your brain is telling you that fudging on it will put you in a good position, it's not true. And so mm-hmm. that's really the kind of pushback on that, of like that the harm it will do to you and your career and everything, mm-hmm. even if it never comes out, mm-hmm. the harm it will do is not worth the that's under submission when it's not under submission,
right.
or whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then this goes on to the second point you wanted to talk about.
The application process. Right, right. And I mean, the CV is central to the application process, but cover letters and research statements and teaching statements, it's just important to make sure that they are accurate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, on occasion, I do just say as part of the editing process, don't lie. Don't ever lie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in here. I mean, and I think that some folks, and you know, this may be one of those places where cultural misunderstandings happen, because Americans have this global reputation for being braggarts. Is that the word?
I think so.
and sometimes when folks from other countries try to engage on our terms, because they're looking for a job in the States and they have a PhD from the States, they will overcompensate and get the idea that they are supposed to make up a bunch of stuff to make themselves look bigger and better, because they think that's what Americans do. And it's like, you know, how big was the fish you caught, you know, like
12 inches, 16 inches.
Yeah. It was the massive trout. And actually it was, you know, 8 inches. Anyway, so they think that's our way of life here. It isn't our way of life here, actually. And sometimes I end up in the editing process explaining that cultural norm, that American kind of the productivity oriented, outcome oriented confidence is and must be, it to be effective has to be based in reality and truth. And so I'm never, ever telling anyone to make up something that isn't true, ever, under any circumstances. All I'm ever doing in the editing process, or you in the interview coaching process, I assume, is jettisoning and cutting away the bullshit and the verbiage and the self-sabotage and the mountains of words that are covering over and concealing and obscuring your actual accomplishments, or replacing this emotional begging language, like, I'd be so excited and thrilled if I could just join your illustrious department, you know, and replacing that with actual content, as in, I have 3 journal articles published in the Journal of X, Journal of Y, and Journal of Z. So that's what we're doing. But we're never, if there's any confusion out there, we're never telling anyone to misrepresent their record.
No, in fact, in the interview interventions, it's my constant mantra, which is, I don't want any adjectives. I want facts and evidence. Mm-hmm. Facts and evidence. Give me facts and evidence.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't want you to tell me about how, you know, wonderful they are, or how you were the first to do this. I want you to tell me what you did. But this is a place where I can see how the slippage happened, right? So especially in the statements, I can imagine in the research statements, in the teaching statements, in the research statements, the little pushes that become, you never actually taught a class. You were a TA in a class. You didn't run the discussion section, but you can, you know, when I taught X, or instead of as a TA for, I did this. Or you ran the discussion section and you do the exact opposite. You don't say that you actually, you know, you don't take the space of saying I did these things and planned the session and did that sort of stuff. So you can lie by underrepresenting what you did, and you can lie by overrepresenting what you did.
What a good point. Right? I mean, we've just been assuming that every lie is going to be overrepresenting, but I mean, what if we, what, I mean, this is a little unfair and sounds accusatory when that's the opposite of what we mean, but what if we'd call all the things that people do that that completely sabotage themselves also lies?
You
lied about your record. Your record is so good, and here you are acting like you're some schmuck.
Right, I do that in Unstuck all the time. I say, you know, I didn't accomplish anything this week.
No, you do that.
Okay, that's a lie. So let's start with facts.
Oh my gosh. Right? I've heard you say that countless times.
Right. It's a lie. It's just, so if you want to keep telling yourself that lie.
I didn't accomplish anything today. I only wrote 2 pages when I intended to write 5.
Right. Uh-huh. So it's a lie.
So that's a lie because you wrote 2 pages.
Right. So I think that we can, especially, I think we can see, I hear this in the interview interventions because people will say to me, but I wasn't the faculty member of record on the course. And I say, okay, you weren't the faculty member of record on the course. What did you do in the course? Well, it had 2 lectures and then there was a lab. And okay, what did you do in the lab? Well, we were in charge of doing X, Y, and Z. So you taught the lab.
Right.
You designed the lesson, you taught it, and you graded it. Okay. So, and you have that, you sat in on every lecture? Yes. Okay. So how would you teach the course when you teach it? And so trying to get people to own the space without overinflating the space is always, it's this very, very, very particular dance.
Yeah. And honestly, that's the majority of what we do in at the professor's inn is trying to get people to stop lying about their record by underselling all of their actual accomplishments.
Right. And I think, to be, again, back to the sort of the having some compassion for all of you.
Yeah, without any shaming or judgment.
That I think of that that interview path as a brick wall, like you see little kids walk on, like you're walking on the sidewalk and they jump up and they're walking on the brick wall.
Right. Yeah, our son who couldn't pass a curb or a wall or a very narrow, treacherous thing and not jump up on it.
Right. So you're trying to do that. You're trying to stay right on that thing.
Knife's edge.
Right. You're on the knife's edge. Yeah. You're trying to say, I'm going to own this without overinflating it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my power, but I'm not going to be, you know, pompous. And and I think that's where the American, you know, braggadocious whatever comes in is that there tends to be this like, this is a cool thing that I did. And it's just like, and you and everybody else with a lot less working against you. So in that application process, looking especially at the teaching statements and the research statements, where are you not taking your space and where are you then or promising huge things with the research statement that you're just not doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that you haven't done and that you're just, it looks good. And then you get to be sick to your stomach that you just sent out something that's a lie. And I will tell you that if you look, if right now, if you're listening and you know you made something up, I want you to feel your body at this exact moment.
Yeah.
Because it's sitting right in the pit of your stomach.
And let's just talk for a minute about how it works on a more, less on a, like an ethical level and more on a logistical level. I would not, knowing what I do from my career in academia, I would not want a lie floating out there about my record because academics are suspicious and they're close readers and they have very good memories. They're methodical thinkers and they know how to gather and retain detail. And so for all of those reasons, this is not a population that you want to be trying to mislead because I, about your record, especially at a junior level, because I think that the chances that it will come back and bite you in the ass are very, very high. Now, having said all of that, There are cases in the news all the time of scholars who misrepresented their actual research conclusions, their methods and their conclusions. That's a whole other issue. We could have a whole...
All those assholes who are fabricating their results.
Fabricating results.
Okay, yeah. So that's a whole...
a whole other thing. We don't engage with that because at the Professor's Inn, we don't engage directly with your research, with your methods or your conclusions. We read them, we make sure that you're articulating them in the best possible way. But we are not situated as a journalist and an anthropologist to be able to evaluate the legitimacy of your methods or your conclusions. Right. So that's not what we're talking about, and we can't judge that. But just so this is sort of merely making the acknowledgement that people all over the place in all sorts of fields are fabricating results, and it's disgusting.
All right, and I'm going to back off my asshole comment and try to go back to a place of, again, the stunning pressure, the ridiculous pressure in STEM in particular to change the field, to do something transformational.
They publish a lot of people blog about it in STEM fields,
right.
That a lot of STEM, a lot of science is doing experiments that don't work.
Right.
And that's also a legitimate outcome. But the trouble is, in our scarcity economy and the pressure to produce quote unquote results, and they're only positive results, they're never negative. Negative results are not considered adequate. You can't get funding to continue the work when you do experiments that don't prove the thing
that you
set out to prove. But the not proving it is also more data.
Right.
So it's also science.
Right. But, so I guess we could flip, we could make a leap to the structural right now and say, hey, journal editors, funders, all of you, quit lying. Quit saying that the most important thing that can happen in science is that you get some remarkable result. The truth is that all of the stuff that we've learned from scientific inquiry is asking, getting it wrong, imagining it this way, doing it that way. So you guys at the gatekeeper level, stop holding a bar that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wouldn't have people running around making up results because they have to show some quote unquote value.
Mm-hmm.
The value is you looked, you ran it through the scientific method we all learned in fifth grade, and you found a result. And that the result is the result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a baby rant at...
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it would be in the decade that we've been doing the Professor's Inn, I have helped a handful of scholars deal with ethical conundrums that they have encountered.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one every 2 years, a mm-hmm. very rare case. But people will say, I discovered that later that my methodology had a disqualifying error in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I now have an article published. I have an article published from that work that I now know the conclusions are not legitimate. And what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
But the people who come to me are people trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And so then they're like, well, who do I tell? And how do I tell them? And how do I put it on my CV? And how do I talk about it in an interview? And then I'm very, very happy to engage with that because that's an error that you're trying to make right. So that's not the subject
right.
of today's
right. It's the ones
episode.
Where you're trying to hide it. And I mean, just to move on to sort of wrap it up, because we're talking about CV application, then with the interviews when you're talking about your teaching, you're talking about this and where you tend to fabricate or undersell yourself. I mean, you started off talking about negotiations and mm-hmm. how in those competing offers.
Yeah.
And is that the place where you worry about the most people?
Well, that's where I find myself typing the words, don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
You can't lie. Remember, you can't lie. And so the temptation there is that if you have a couple of different offers and you're using one as leverage against the other, that you might have a temptation to slightly inflate
mm-hmm.
the terms of one offer so that you can have better leverage with the other offer. Most institutions, departments will demand to see the offer from the other school. And I have come to understand that that's really weird from a corporate perspective, that that's never done. But in academia, that's totally normative, that the dean will want to see the offer. Now, you're the conduit of that offer. So I suppose you could lie I suppose you could. I don't want you to do that. I just, and that's where I come. That's why in negotiation work, I'm like, don't lie.
That just made me so scared. When you said, I guess you could do that, I was like, oh no, don't do that.
Because, you know, deans know each other and department heads know each other, and it's just a bad move. And then there's also the case of, do you want to pretend that you got an offer? So, and then tell a school that's only at the campus visit stage that you had an offer so that they will hurry up their search and then, you know, reach and then make you an offer. And, you know, so I think at the negotiation level, with that tail end part of the job search, there are a lot of places where there's a temptation to lie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I do get it. I get it, because now the stakes are really highest at that point in some ways, because now you're a finalist and it's so damn close. So, but I just, people know each other. By the time you're a finalist in a couple of departments, those departments are going to be in the same field or similar fields. People talk. It's just a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bad idea because it could be 3 years later that somebody's at a conference and has a whole conversation and somehow it comes out that you never had the offer or no, they didn't ever. I mean, there's just ways that those things seep out.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to keep them from seeping out is to not, you know, dump them into the tank in the first place. Mm-hmm. So really trying to be as centered as you possibly can, back to that sort of like, this is my ethical standard here. And, you know, I recognize the temptation. Karen and I were having a conversation just prior to recording this, where she was saying, you know, if you have the only right up to the line that you sign a contract, you can, you know, go back and forth and negotiate. But once you've signed that contract, you can't go keep pursuing it with the other.
With another job. So sometimes I do get asked this. I get asked this fairly regularly. I've signed the contract, but I'm shortlisted for another job. Can I go to that campus visit? And I do say, no, I say no. If you've signed the contract, you need to stop searching for other jobs. That is not appropriate.
I know. And the reason I was bringing it up is because of the conversation that we had is I moved completely off my moral center and said, fuck them.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, whatever. I have no love lost for departments in there. And then I thought, wait a minute. Those are, you know, those departments are people I know or not know. It doesn't matter whether you know them, but they're actually human beings. It's actually effort. It's actually
Scarce resources that they devoted to that hire and months and months and months of work. And so
I was totally off base.
Interesting.
But you can see how you can get there.
And the bitterness can get you there. Cynicism can get you there.
It's like,
absolutely. Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah. And I think you just have to be so careful to keep coming back to a place that you are not acting against anyone. You're not acting. You're staying here and acting by your own
Moral code.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, if you haven't yet signed the contract, I am very comfortable with you continuing to look at all other potential offers.
Absolutely.
Because I have, and there's a real reason for this, I have very, very occasionally seen jobs disintegrate at the 11th hour.
Oh, yeah.
At the contract stage where it was like everything is done. All that's needed is that letter that come to your house and you sign it. And suddenly the letter doesn't come. And you're like, what the hell? And suddenly you discover that the dean nixed it because there was some unexpected budget crisis. And so, yeah, you keep all your irons in the fire up until that moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. So So you had mentioned this before, just so we touch base on it, is that you said in passing at the very beginning, lying by omission is sometimes okay.
Yeah, right. I wanted to make sure I said that.
So what do you mean by that? Like when you say, you know, I don't need to mention to you that I didn't get a bachelor's degree and that's just made up, but I did get a PhD. I guess that would be impossible, wouldn't it?
Could people
get into a PhD without?
They can. They can if from like a... there are the rare. And then, of course, there's the whole European thing and other cultures that have other countries that have other educational systems where you don't have a BA. People freak out. They come to me and like they're freaking out because like, I don't have this thing, but I have a PhD. I'm like, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but let's go to what the real lying by omission you're talking about.
Yeah,
you're talking about
where I spend a lot of time in my live workshops or my webinars talking as my post-academic webinar where I have a whole slide that says, and that means it's official because it's written down and people share those things and put them on Twitter. So I have to be sure I stand by what I put on those slides, that you don't need to tell your advisor that you're looking for a non-academic job.
Oh, God, no.
And you don't even have to tell your advisor the truth if your advisor point blank asks you, if your advisor is proven to be someone who is not reliable and not safe. And you might not know, and that's fine. And you might walk into a hornet's nest without knowing, and you have to deal with that. But if you have good evidence from your predecessors that your advisor is a backstabbing, retaliatory asshole who an elitist and only considers academic jobs appropriate and legitimate and will shun you and retaliate against you if you tell them that you're doing, that you're looking for something else, then absolutely conceal that from them. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that those are the kinds of questions you have to use some nimbleness in language so you don't add lies to the words that you use. So if somebody says, you know, are you applying for X, Y, or Z, that you just move the topic over to say, I'm applying to this academic job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to say, and this, and this, and this.
Right.
But you don't want to be in the position that, again, you don't want to be in the position in your cellular level of having told a straight up lie. So figuring out how to leave shit out with people who are going to undermine you. And we all know that, like, I'm not telling that person about the research I'm doing because this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference there. And we just wanted to make sure that not telling people some things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but let's talk about something else that I'm asked all the time that I just remembered.
Okay.
People ask me, should I lie about my research conclusions so that nobody steals my work?
Oh.
They ask me this all the time. I hate it. It makes me so upset. Or they might not use the word lie per se, although I have entertained that question before in those words. But more likely they will say, should I conceal my conclusions in my cover letter so that nobody can on the search committee can steal my work? I get asked this depressingly regularly. And that is another occasion in which I say, good heavens. No, you can't live like that. That is no way to live.
I just wonder. So when I hear that, first of all, I just get like depressed at the level of wanting to crawl under the table where all the equipment is set up and just be like, never mind. Just never mind.
this is all just too depressing.
If this is really the way it's all going down, what? And then I move up to the next level and think, what kind of nightmarish lab are you in?
That's true.
What's going on? And then I get mad. So I move from crawling under the table to self-righteous. And then I think, well, then we're right back to where we are with this podcast is no. The way to change the culture of the academy is to not follow in its footsteps. And guess what one of the lies is? This is my research and I did it. That's, you know, if you're stealing people's shit and calling it yours, it's a lie. So that person is afraid to reveal what they did out of fear that you're going to steal it. Stealing it and presenting it is a lie. So we're going to go back to the original point.
Yeah.
On all levels, don't lie.
Yeah. And how many times have I gotten messages from people who just wanted, didn't even so much want help. They just wanted an ear to listen to their story where their advisor stole their research.
Yeah.
Yeah. And boy, and that's not rare. I mean, I've talked a lot today to try to emphasize how rare different kinds of lies are in our work. But that one story, that's not rare at all. Advisors stealing their students' research.
Yeah. Yep.
I hate it. We're going to need to wrap up and we can't really give you advice right now about how to deal. And I know some of you are sitting there with bated breath saying, and what do we do when that happens?
You go read the two posts that we did in February on what do I do with a toxic advisor. We have a blog series that comes out once a week.
Dispatches from the front lines.
Dispatches from the front lines. You can look for the hashtag academic dispatches. And they're just a ton of great advice from people in those situations and just take a little moment to give a shout out to everybody who's giving that free labor of answering questions for people. It's just an amazing gift and resource. So check those out.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. All right. Well, on that note, I think we have said everything we wanted to, except we didn't talk about what you were saying about structural lies.
Right. So you know, and I don't know, maybe it's the
misrepresentations.
Maybe we've just dragged this down into the toxicity of the academy so far that I'm worried now that I'm going to leave you all like it's fucked up. But it is. There are places where it's fucked up. But by and large, and Karen made this point before she started the podcast, she was like, I don't want to do this thing where I feed people's paranoia that there are fixed searches and there are all these fixed things going on. That's not the case.
Yeah, so we want to make sure that so rarely rigged.
Yeah. And that, or that the whole system is, you know, in some kind of conversation with each other. At the same time, I just do want to end by taking this off the individual and pushing it onto the system and saying there is inherent in the system right now systemic lies. So they're lies about the potential. There's just a giant gaslighting lie being told about going into a PhD program. Right?
Yeah.
So there's this massive lie right there. There's a lie by omission about what you can do with the PhD when you get out.
Right.
There's the structural lies of if you just work hard, you will get.
Yeah, the lie that it's a meritocracy.
That it's a meritocracy.
The lie that your quote unquote full funding that your department gave you as a for your award is sufficient for you to live on. That's a huge lie.
Right.
The departments tell right and left.
Right. And the lie that white people like to tell themselves of anybody around them who is coming from a marginalized community has just the same experience, just the same opportunities and just the same engagement. So there's this, all
or
this stuff.
The lies that white people like to tell that you, person of color, only got into this program because you're Black.
Right.
That's another one.
Right. So we white people, we like to live in the land of lies. We love to live in the land of meritocracy, that it's all
gaslighting,
and that we can all get a job. All you got to do is work hard. Your old white man advisors tell you, just get a breath mint and show up. You'll be great. Those lies are structural, and your struggle in those is not you. It's the structural problem.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make sure that was really clear. You get choices in your ethical presentation, but there are some things that we need to start calling out lies from Jump Street.
Absolutely.
What are you doing with a PhD program at this level?
Right.
What are you doing?
Right.
You're lying. So I just wanted to end on that. Or maybe I'm hoping that with a rant, it's a little bit more invigorating and a little less like we're doomed. Because I don't feel like that. I feel like part of what we're all about is trying to say we don't have to be. We just have to pull back the curtain and start telling the freaking truth.
Absolutely. And the gaslighting from the minute that you're admitted to a PhD program to you're given funding for a PhD program to your quote unquote mentored, but not in a PhD program, to you go out on the market, given advice for that. And then that you're hired into, if you're hired into tenure track positions, what they promise you versus what you're actually going to get. And then the great lie of the adjunct lie. And, oh, if you just work really hard for us, we're going to consider you for a tenure track offer. This is going to convert to a tenure track line. I mean, the lies, it's just lie upon lie upon lie. Gaslighting, gaslighting, gaslighting. The greatest thing that's happened in the last 10 years is the widespread adoption of the word gaslighting, because it basically explains the academy.
And the Dixie Chicks have a new song that dropped today called Gaslighter.
Oh, awesome.
It's the
ooh, I can't
official,
wait to listen
the
to
official
it.
Video is a trip.
Oh.
Check it out.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.